She's the creator of Uber Frugal Week. It's 8 days long because that's how long weeks feel, right? We're learning how to pinch pennies like never before here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. House Democrats proposed a $2.2 trillion stimulus bill yesterday that includes a second round of $1,200 stimulus checks. But will Congress pass another relief package? For millions of Americans, a wait-and-see approach won't work because financial hardship is now. Have you made financial changes, big or small, since March? How are they working out? How are you being frugal? We're at 800-642-1234. Elizabeth Willard-Thames is the creator of the personal finance blog FrugalWoods.com, author of the book Meet the Frugal Woods, Achieving Financial Independence Through Simple Living. Elizabeth, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
You're such a big advocate for tracking spending. And before we get into the nuts and bolts of doing that, why should we be tracking our spending?
You've got to know what you're starting with. I think that tracking your spending gives you a very clear, understandable baseline. Without knowing what you're spending, it's very difficult to set savings goals because it's very hard to understand where that money might come from. It's also very empowering to track your spending because you don't need anyone else to do it for you. You don't need for your circumstances to change radically. It's something that you can sit down and do to immediately have this sort of proactive impact on your money.
I was looking at your last month budget tracker, you know, exposing where your own money goes. Elizabeth, I have no idea how much I spent in fresh fruit in August. Like, I don't know. So you really have to be detail-oriented here.
You do. And I think what's great is that for each family, for each person, you will find a way to track your money that makes sense for you. Some people like to write it down in a notebook the minute they buy something. Other people like me are far lazier, and I like to just download everything at the end of the month from a free expense tracking service. So there's a lot of software that can help you out with this. You can also utilize your bank's online interface, or like I said, you can track it on your own in real time. It's really a question of finding the system that works for you, that works for any other money spending people in your household, and that's going to give you that concrete sense at the end of every month, because you really want to be doing this every month of the year, because what you spend in December 2018 is going to be very different from what you spend in August 2020. And so you want to see that long-term trajectory of how your spending ebbs and flows over the course of a year, and really what you're spending in each category on average.
Okay, so you have these categories. There's fixed and discretionary, but you also have some other categories. Can you kind of explain these different pots of money?
With the advent of the pandemic, I thought, you know, we need some new money categories. So fixed expenses are things that are really unchangeable, like property tax, rent, mortgage. The next category that I like to think about are reducible expenses. And this is any expense that could possibly be reduced. So that includes things like your grocery store bill, your cell phone bill, household supplies. The next item are discretionary expenses, and those are the expenses that can be 100% eliminated. Unfortunately, that is stuff like dining out and takeout, two of my very favorite things, because discretionary is really that part of your budget that you don't have to be spending. And that if you're in a jam, if you find you need to save more money immediately, those discretionary expenses are the ones that you can lop off. And then finally, again, because of the pandemic, I think forbearance eligible is another category to keep in mind. So that's a little bit of a moving target, as you mentioned at the top of the hour, but we do have programs from the federal government that are helping people out right now. So that would include things like federal student loan forbearance, a moratorium on evictions. There are a number of different programs that people need to be aware of.
We're talking with Elizabeth Willer Thames. She writes about managing money and living a frugal lifestyle. We're talking, taking your questions about budgeting, saving, just managing financially during a recession. Are you wasting less, living paycheck to paycheck, or is the paycheck gone now due to the pandemic? What money situation do you need some Frugalwoods insights on? We're at 800-642-1234. So, Elizabeth, when you get down to it, where do we get frugal? Once we've figured out where our money is going, how can you become more frugal as a person?
So it's going to vary for each person, which is a tough answer, but it comes back to knowing your categories. So knowing what items you absolutely have to pay for every month, and then knowing what things you can either reduce or let go of. So my favorite approach is to go line by line through that monthly expense report. So you're looking at every single dollar that you spent, and you're trying to identify where you might be able to move the needle. I really like focusing on the big fish. So it can be tempting to kind of scroll down to the bottom of your expenses and say, $3 on coffee, I can eliminate that. Well, that's not really going to move the needle. So I like to start at the top and take into account some of the larger systemic changes that you can make in your life. So if you have a mortgage payment, are you in a position where you could refinance and take advantage of the lower interest rates that we're seeing right now? For some people, that can be a tremendous difference, since we're seeing mortgage interest rates in the low to mid 2%, which is very low. And then looking at things like your grocery budget, that's such a big one, especially for those of us with kids who are at home.
Yes, yes, they eat a lot.
And trying to see, okay, can I spend less? Can I focus on sort of those old pillars of cheap grocery store shopping, of buying bulk raw ingredients and cooking from scratch, right? And finding ways to sort of reduce our reliance on things that are packaged and prepared, which is so painful because I just want to hand my kids a granola bar and say, please leave. But, you know, finding a way to, again, trim around the edges, and then looking at utilities, looking at what you're spending in electricity and looking at what you're spending in heating costs, and seeing if there are efficiencies that can be made that will bear fruit over time. So I love making a change once and then having it stick with you. So if you can find those bigger fish that you can reduce or eliminate, and then you spend less every single month.
Well, Elizabeth, I recently found a medium-sized fish in my cell phone plan, and I'm now saving $40 or so, a little more a month, because I switched to a mobile virtual network operator and not one of the, you know, major mobile vendors. I won't say which one it was, but my bill was just going up and up, and I was like, wait a minute, I think there are other options.
Yes, I am so glad you brought that up. That is one of my very favorite examples, because MVNOs are, I like to call them the TJ Maxx of cell phone service. It is the same service, but for a much cheaper price. So my husband and I each pay around $10 a month for our cell phone service bill. And that was, you know, previously we were paying, I don't know, over $100. And so that's an example of something that it's going to be a headache. It's annoying to change service providers. You know, you got to do the SIM card, you've got to reactivate. But once you do that initial work, you are saving so much money every single month. So that's the kind of thing that I really encourage people to put the time into. And so if you want to Google that and research it on your own, they are MVNOs.
We have a personal finance and frugal living expert, Elizabeth Willer Thames, as our guide to saving all the money we can. Have you seen financial setbacks due to the pandemic and recession? What type of support or guidance are you searching for? What frugal tips and tenets do you live by? Share yours, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Elizabeth Willer Thames here on the Ideas Network.
We'll be right back.
We have Frugal Woods in the house here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Frugal living expert and personal finance writer Elizabeth Willard-Thames is helping us to learn to live with less. And she said recently that she's leaning into the pandemic. She wrote, she's no longer in denial, no longer hoping for a swift conclusion, no longer deluding herself that school and daycare will resume anytime soon. She's leaning into it all. We're tapping into her financial savvy, and she's taking your questions about living a frugal lifestyle. Have you had financial setbacks? What are you going through? What are you working through? Let's talk it out. 800-642-1234. And Elizabeth Willard-Thames stays with us. Elizabeth, I feel like we kind of just brushed through the grocery store, and groceries are such a big line item on the budget. Are there ways that we can save with groceries?
Absolutely. And so I think I mentioned earlier, the biggest thing you can do is step away from the packaging. So look for bulk raw ingredients. So anything that you can make yourself is probably going to be less expensive than the packaged alternative. So I actually make my own bread in a bread maker that I got at a garage sale, and it's shockingly easy. It takes very little skill. You just kind of dump the ingredients in and then you push a button. So that's my kind of bread baking. And there are so many other examples of things like that where it's not actually that much more difficult to make it from scratch. I make my own hummus with chickpeas that I get dried. So going from a dried bean to a canned bean to the fully packaged hummus, you know, at the very end of that spectrum, the dried bean is the cheapest ingredient. So there are so many wonderful recipes online. And I think tapping into that ability to take these raw ingredients is going to save a lot of money. It also matters where you shop. So there are expensive grocery stores that will remain unnamed, and there are less expensive grocery stores. And I think that when we can let go of sort of the marketing and the beauty of the interior of the store, or maybe even the ease of their delivery service, and look at the price per unit, a lot of times you can save money just by going to that cheaper store and by focusing on doing all of your purchasing there. So that's another thing where you may need to do some research initially. I can remember going around with my husband and like writing down the price per pound of almonds and then figuring out where are they cheapest. And once you figure that out, again, you can iterate on it every single month. It can become this autopilot action that is going to save you money really in perpetuity. And I also find that this lets you focus on health in a new way, because if you're cooking things yourself, if you're buying those raw ingredients, you can think a little bit more about what you're putting into your food.
And you can stock up your freezer and your pantry at the same time if you make big batches of things.
I am a huge big batch fan. So we will cook a huge batch of something like chili or stew and then freeze the majority of it and keep some in the refrigerator. So this lets us both economize on the time that it takes to prepare a meal, but also to have frugal takeout anytime we want. You just take it out of the freezer and defrost it. And that to me is sort of the best aspect of frugal living, is when you can have your freezer stocked with food that you've made yourself.
We're talking,
because then you're not falling victim to takeout. You're not feeling that sort of desperate urge of like, I just need to order a pizza to feed my children. Well, if you have these meals in the freezer, then you have that option of relying on sort of the goodness of your past self to cook those meals and freeze them.
We're talking with Elizabeth Willard-Thames, who's helping us find ways to save during this time without feeling overwhelmed. How have you been approaching finances in the last 6 months? We're at 800-642-1234, taking your pocketbook questions. Elizabeth, looking specifically at beauty products, things that are in our bathrooms, this you would maybe say is discretionary spending, but people appreciate their shampoo and conditioners. You know, where do you start in the beauty products category? Because this category is or can be pricey.
To be clear, I'm a big fan of bathing. So yes, I support the beauty products and the shampoos of the world. This is another one where it really goes back to where you're buying the items and what brand you're getting. So I am a generics girl. Anything that I can get generic works for me. I have found over the years that a lot of these generic products contain the same ingredients, but are a fraction of the price. Another thing that I've done is really just minimize my beauty routine. I used to have a very lengthy, very involved, you know, it was hairspray to nail polish beauty routine. And over the years, I have slowly let go of a lot of the things that I don't really need. So I found, okay, I don't actually need soap and body wash. You know, I can just winnow it down to soap. So figuring out which products you actually are using and you're actually deriving a lot of value from versus what you're buying out of habit. Another great exercise here that you can do both in your bathroom and in your kitchen is to go through your backlog. So use up all those little samples that you may have. Use up the end of that shampoo that smelled a little weird but does work as a shampoo, and really identify what things you're using on a regular basis and what things you can just let go of. Same thing for the pantry, the freezer. Figure out what's in there. You know what? I once found a bag of like 5 pounds of green beans that apparently I had bought at some point in the back of my freezer. So, you know, use those up, put them in a stew. It's this idea of auditing what you've bought. So you've stocked your pantry, you've stocked your bathroom. What are you actually using? What do you need? What could you let go of and still have the same quality of life? So I'm not about deprivation. I'm much more about efficiency and streamlining.
I am seeing less clutter now in the pantry, less clutter in the bathroom cabinets as we go through, as you say, and use everything and make sure that you're not just buying more and adding on top of things without making sure that you've used what is there.
Yes, I think a side benefit of frugality is minimalism and is this simplicity and this tendency towards being clutter-free. And it's, I think, a wonderful way to really identify your priorities. When you limit the things that you have, limit the things that you buy, it really allows me to open up and focus my most precious resources, my time and my money, on the things that ultimately are going to deliver me the highest return on my investment.
So Elizabeth, let's say that we do find areas here and there, like say in the cell phone plan, $45 a month. How do we put those small wins, those small savings, to the best use?
I think it's important to think about those savings over time. It can be a little bit demoralizing when you're saying, oh, I did all this work and I only saved, you know, $100 this month. But you need to look at that in a compounding way, that over time, that's really going to add up. And so when you're looking at saving more, this is a very personal question of how you're going to deploy that money. And there's kind of this hierarchy of how we want to use that extra money. And one of the first things is to have an emergency fund. So an emergency fund is 3 to 6 months worth of what you spend every month. So it goes back to needing to know what you're spending and saving that money in an account that's easily accessible. So this is not an investment account or a retirement account. This is a checking account, a savings account, where you have that money if you need it. And I think that with the pandemic, unfortunately, many of us are understanding in a visceral way why we need to have that backstop of emergency funding. It's really your buffer between you and debt. It's the buffer between something like a job loss being a crisis versus an upsetting inconvenience. And so if you can start focusing on funneling that money into an emergency fund, I know it's not the most exciting thing to do, but it's really important, an important way to give yourself long-term financial stability so that you're not sort of waxing and waning with each paycheck.
When do you touch an emergency fund? Like, when do you say now is the right time to use this money?
It's going to vary for each person. I think you'll know when you need it. You know, an emergency fund is not for a vacation. An emergency fund is not for an upgrade to your TV. An emergency fund is for a very unexpected medical expense. It is for perhaps replacing a car that you need in order to get to work. It is for covering your expenses if you've lost your job. You know, that's really kind of the canonical example, is that if you lose your job, the emergency fund will cover all of those monthly expenses. So the rent, the mortgage, the groceries, the utility bills. And beyond that, I would be very careful about dipping into it. And then anytime you have to use it, make it a priority to replace that money as soon as you're able to. And the other beautiful thing about the emergency fund and about frugality is that the less you spend every month, the less you need to save into your emergency fund.
We're learning to live a frugal life in these pandemic times. Elizabeth Willard Thames is the founder of Frugal Woods, and she's our guide. Have you been laid off or furloughed? What questions do you have about navigating pandemic-related benefits and services? Have you started to track your spending like Elizabeth has guided us? What did you find out? Join into the conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll be back to talk more about how to be thrifty right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're learning how to be very intentional with our spending here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Frugal living is about smarter money management. And as the coronavirus pandemic has upended many people's financial lives, we have the Frugal Woods founder, Elizabeth Willard Thames, who acknowledges we have a human tendency to buy more when we're feeling stressed or depressed. And she asks, how do you square that impulse with the very real fact that we're living in a recession? Join in 800-642-1234. Personal finance expert Elizabeth Willard Thames stays with us. Elizabeth, let's talk credit cards here for a moment. You're a big fan of cash back credit cards. What do you see there?
I love cash back cards because cash is a reward that you are always going to use. Credit cards typically offer you either cash back or travel rewards. And I love to travel. I love hotel points and airline miles. But the fact is, you may or may not use those within the time frame that they're allocated. If you're a serious traveler and that's something that you redeem regularly, then that absolutely makes sense. But if, like me, you're a little bit, you know, lackadaisical with sort of where those airline miles actually go, then cashback is such a great option. If you can pay your credit card bill off in full every single month, and if you can really be accountable to yourself to only use that credit card to buy things you were going to buy anyway, then I think using a cashback card is just a fantastic way to get something for nothing. And there are quite a few cards on the market that offer 2% cashback, 1.5%, 1% cashback, whatever it is, you're essentially getting some money back for paying your bill off in full every month and for using the card instead of writing checks or using a debit card. And one thing I want to note about using a credit card is that there is this myth that sort of filters around that you should keep a balance on your card. You should not. You want to pay that card off in full every month. What impacts your credit score is the length of time that that credit card is open and also your credit utilization. So it's not a question of keeping a balance on that card. So you can feel very good about paying it off in full every month, get it down to zero, take your cashback rewards, and then move on.
And you know, Discover was one of the original cashback credit cards, and now there are certainly others in the mix. How do you go about finding a credit card that's right for you? How do you shop for a credit card?
So in general, I really like cards that have no annual fee. I don't really want to pay a credit card company for the privilege of using the card. So I'm looking for cards that have no annual fee. And then when you're looking at a cash back card, I like cards that don't have categories. Some cards will offer you cash back only on specific purchases. So only on movie theaters or only on restaurants, only on gasoline. that's a little bit too much for me. This is too, you know, too much to keep track of. And so I prefer a card that just gives you a flat cash back rate on all of your purchases. That being said, if you're someone who is really good at tracking those rotating categories, then go for it, because sometimes that can be really advantageous and can give you a higher percentage cash back. So it's a question of how hands-on you want to be. If like me, you just kind of want to blindly reach into your wallet and know that that's the right credit card to use, then go with a flat cash back offer. And you can look at what your own bank offers. You can also research online and find something that's going to match with your spending habits.
Well, spending habits right there. What about getting on the same page with your partner about the way you spend, your approach to money, how you spend? Can you help us navigate that when there is someone else who's sharing that money?
I think it's largely a question of sharing the same long-term vision. So sitting down with your partner and identifying, where do we want to be in 10 years? Where do we want to be in 20 years? Or my personal favorite in the pandemic, where would we like to be in 2 weeks, in 4 weeks? You know, make it short-term. That's completely fine. Try and find what that destination is separate from money. I have often found that if you set that lifestyle intention or that goal first, you can then make your money follow and facilitate that goal. For me, it's very hard to just have a dollar amount goal of, okay, I need to save X amount of money, but why? As my preschooler constantly asks, but why do we need to do that? And I think if you can address that at a really deep level, then you and your partner can hopefully work towards getting on the same page. And another thing about financial outlooks is that they are often determined by the way in which we were raised. So if you were raised in a home with financial insecurity, with food scarcity, with concerns about money that you felt as a child, it's very likely you're going to approach your finances as an adult very differently from someone who grew up in a financially stable environment. And so I have found with working with couples over the years that sometimes therapy is the best intervention. And it seems a little bit counterintuitive because you've got to go pay somebody to sit down and talk through things, and it doesn't actually involve your budget. But that can really be the way to understand a divergence in viewpoints between partners, because it's easy to get resentful, defensive, and frustrated and embroiled in looking at a spreadsheet when it may not really be about the numbers. It may be very much about your holistic view of money. So trying to work at what the root of the disconnect is probably going to yield the best result.
We have Elizabeth Willard-Thames, who's the creator of the personal finance blog, frugalwoods.com. She's taking your questions on money, savings, credit, and how those things may have gotten a bit tricky, out of whack in these pandemic months. Join in with your questions. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Elizabeth, your family uses a team lead approach for a lot of tasks, and including financial things. How does this team lead method work?
This came about actually before we had children. My husband and I realized that there are just so many tasks that need to be accomplished in the household. And the best way for us to do that was to appoint team leads. And so my husband is the team lead on cooking and grocery shopping. I am the team lead on laundry and cooking, and it goes on from there. And we really identified our strengths, the things that we prefer to do. I would much rather cook than clean. I mean, wait, no, clean than cook. He feels the inverse. And so it's important to kind of identify where those natural inclinations are. And then the person who's not the team lead steps back and is hands off. And that to both of us was really important, because it's very hard to be micromanaged while you're trying to accomplish a chore. And so this allows us to each say, that's your area. I trust and expect that you will complete your work, while you trust and expect that I will complete my tasks. And then with adding children to our family, that has become even more crucial. And we've really become rather granular in that the times of day a different parent is you know, the primary parent, which has been important in the pandemic and with both of us working from home, being very, very clear about expectations. So it's really a pretty simple, straightforward approach to saying, okay, you are in charge of the kids in the morning. You are the one who will always be making breakfast. So it's never a question of who's going to be in charge of this and why are they not doing their job? But it's knowing ahead of time how this is going to play out. And then you can filter that all the way down through how your money is managed, how the money is spent. And again, that goal setting exercise of where you really want your family or your partnership to be headed.
And really kind of mapping out your life so that you can get through day to day, but also really know then long term where you're headed.
Exactly.
Well, you know, when you look at this organization, you are a big fan of spreadsheets and you recommend that we organize our debts by interest rate. What do spreadsheets add to this mix of organization?
It's true. I am a lover of spreadsheets. I find them just very easy to see the information in columns, but I don't want that to prevent anyone who feels uncomfortable with spreadsheets or not quite sure what they are. You can do this with pen and paper. So the example that you gave of debts by interest rate is another way of really understanding what the highest priority is. Because with a debt, the worst thing about a debt is its interest rate. It's not necessarily the total dollar amount of the debt, it's the interest rate. So you might have a mortgage for, let's say, $200,000 that has a 3% interest rate. You might also have credit card debt of $200 with a 17% interest rate. You want to focus on that higher interest rate. So that 17% interest rate is much more important to pay off than the larger sum of your mortgage. So really, this is a way of just understanding what the priority is, because it's not always the dollar amount. Sometimes it is the interest rate.
And student loan debt is in the mix on the spreadsheet as well.
Absolutely. So if you want to make a debt spreadsheet, you really want to put down absolutely everything that you owe. So that includes things like student loan debt. It includes credit cards. It includes car loans, mortgages. It's any money that you owe that someone has extended to you as a line of credit. And getting a handle on that is really the sort of second prong of managing your money holistically. So you want to track your spending. You want to have an emergency fund of cash saved up. And then you really want to prioritize paying down those debts, because high interest rate debt is just eating away at your bottom line every month. You want to get rid of that as soon as you can.
We have Elizabeth Willard Thames, the creator of the personal finance blog, frugalwoods.com, author of the book, Meet the Frugal Woods. We're learning how to be thrifty and economical in these trying times. Who taught you how to be frugal? What has budgeting taught you in these difficult times? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We will be back in a minute with Elizabeth Willard Thames right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with the founder of Frugal Woods, Elizabeth Willard Thames. We're learning how to stretch money as far as it will go and how to make smarter money management decisions. Let's bring in a call now. Sue is joining us from Westby. Hi, Sue. Hi there, Sue. Can you hear us? Oh, Sue, I think we have a bad connection. One more time. Can you hear us? Oh, I don't know if we have Sue there. Well, Elizabeth, I want to ask you as well, you know, there is a sea of financial advice out there. What is your best tip for us? How should we focus right now?
It's a question of what's most pressing for you. And a lot of financial information can be found online and from primary sources. So by primary sources, I mean the financial institutions that govern a lot of this information. So places like the IRS, they actually have a great website. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they also have a fantastic website. These are very easily navigable online free resources that you can go to. So if you're wondering about your retirement investments, if you are confused about student loan debt or anything like that, I really encourage folks to check out these resources, find the answer from an authoritative resource. There's also plenty of information available at the library. And I think it is, again, understanding where you're at financially and what you need to be doing to move the needle.
Let's try Sue again from Westby. Hi, Sue.
Hello. Good to talk to you this morning. My husband and I pretty much have the savings thing down. Fortunately, we have never felt that spending was any kind of therapy for us. And that's what I see with so many people. And we've chosen to avoid debt at any. We've occasionally, you know, when we remodeled a house or bought a house, we did have debt, but otherwise we just didn't. And when you talked about putting money aside for it, when you start saving and you actually have some there, we had a list, a small, medium, and large goal list of things that we'd like to purchase, things that we'd like to do around the house. And you're like up to so many dollars and for each of them. And we went on the list together. And every once in a while, you know, we check it. You know, we got some money. We should really do this one. And we decide together to do it. And it worked great. It made you feel like you had goals and you were actually achieving some of them. And another quick one is for cars. We never drove real fancy cars. We drove reliable cars. And actually, we drove one car for a long time. And that helped so much with budgeting. But we always had a car account at the credit union. And we'd pretend to make car payments into that account every month. And if we needed repairs, we had money there. If we needed to get another car, we'd look and see how much money we had in there and decide, you know, what kind of car we were going to buy.
Oh, these are amazing tips, Sue. I want just to give Elizabeth a chance to respond as we're short on time.
I think those are great examples, Sue, and it's really wonderful to hear that those are models that have worked for you and your husband over the years. For some folks, having those separate accounts that are titled works extremely well. So having a car savings account, having a vacation savings account, having a remodeling your kitchen savings account, being very intentional and specific with your goals can help a lot. And you're able to, with many online banking interfaces, you can label each of those accounts so that you can understand how you're working towards those specific goals.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Elizabeth Willard-Thames is the creator of the personal finance blog, frugalwoods.com. She's the author of the book, Meet the Frugal Woods, Achieving Financial Independence Through Simple Living. We have a link, by the way, to Frugal Woods. Go to wpr.org/mornings. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a retiring businesswoman.
Sue Jensen has been driving her ice cream truck around Wausau for 30 years. During the summer, she does her routes 7 nights a week. Now, at age 73, she's looking to sell the truck and the business. WPR's Rob Menser asked Jensen to share her reflections on 3 decades of bringing kids frozen treats and the sound of summer.
Actually, I'm so used to it, I don't even... People say, do you hear it in your sleep? But no.
There
30 years ago, I bought an old truck from, it was a mail truck from a bakery, and it was brown, and we stripped it down and painted it white, and I just made circles on it, different neon-colored circles, and had a little megaphone on the front of the truck and pushed the button and played 10 notes. I have two daughters, and I took the letters out of their names and made it into Danie's Ice Cream Wagon.
Okay. What are their names?
One is Dana, and the other one is Randy Renee. The youngest one caused me the most problems. She'd holler out the window, "Free ice cream, free ice cream." So it took me about 5 years to get rid of people asking me for the free ice cream.
You can get one of those.
Snow cone, one of the Spider-Man ones.
These ones are my favorite. Yeah, that's a cream. So you would probably love that. It's orange flavored.
I listen, because a lot of adults just ignore when a kid is talking. I usually listen, and if they have a question, I try to answer it for them. Some of them tell me their life story, and if they're having hard times, they tell me them, and I don't like to dwell on the hard time ones. I feel they're almost like my family, most of them, because some of them, like, I've grown up with them for 30 years. I lived on a farm growing up. My dad died when I was 5. I have 3 brothers. We had nothing growing up. So I worked all my life. Things haven't always been easy, but I kind of roll with the flow. Sometimes if I'll have parents come up, my child really wants something and I have no money, and I will let them get something. And if they don't have enough money, or a little short, I'll just say, that's okay.
You can get one of those.
Give me my snowball.
Get the cherry. Give me my sour cherry.
It's fun for me. I can be myself. I'm my boss. I have nobody telling me what to do, except the customers. But, yeah, I think it's just I like meeting people and I like having the kids have fun. This year I started April 30th, and I start probably the first couple warm days in spring, and then I go till about the 15th of September. Right now I'm at the stage where when I run out of ice cream, I'm done. I'm getting older, and it's time to not be working 7 days a week. Every year my business gets better and better. This year was a really good year, and I figured I'd quit while I was on top.
Sue Jensen has driven Danie's Ice Cream Wagon in Wausau for 30 years. Her story came to us from WPR's Rob Menser. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Hearing the voices of Wisconsin in all the nooks and crannies of our state. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.